session number 17605, reel 3.
Mr. Evans, reel 2. You're at Dulag, Lufton. You're saying they started being aggressive to you.
The first thing they asked me who I was, and I gave them name, rank, and number. And this fellow said, "Well, can you prove who you are?" So I produced the dog tags I was wearing with my name, rank, number, and religion on. And he said, "Well, that doesn't prove anything." So I was rather startled at this. I thought that was fairly good identification. And he said, "Well, can you prove to me you're not a displaced person that found a dead airman, put his dog tags on, and now you're hoping to be sent to an Allied prison camp?" So I said, "Well, no, I really can't prove that." So he more or less intimated that I was in trouble unless I could prove my identity. But of course, it was a ploy to get more information. He finished up by saying, "Well, if you don't help us, we can't help you." And he said, "We'll have to hand you over to the Gestapo," which rather frightened me. But that was the most aggressive part. The rest was rather subtle. We progressed from that type of interview to a more sophisticated interview with senior people who were seeking information. And I believe now I understand that some of the best psychiatrists in Germany were in that place, and they were using the ability they had to extract information from prisoners in quite a subtle manner.
Was there anything physically done to you?
No. No, the conditions were very primitive. It was the small cell I was put into had a window, a barred window with opaque glass high up, and below it a very large metal, turned out to be a radiator. It was a huge thing, and I got in there and hadn't been in there very long, and it started to get extremely hot, and I started stripping my clothes off because of the heat. The furnishing was just a bed with a straw palliasse on. And then an hour or two later it began to get very, very cold, and all clothes back on again, and continued like this, and I believe it was intended to demoralise prisoners, that the fact that they couldn't settle, and this continual heat and continual cold was part of the power for the course. The also it was infested with fleas. I used to catch them and kill them and line them up and count them. I think I got up to something like 24 one day. It was whether they were intentionally infected with fleas, I don't know, but there was certainly plenty of them there.
Did you come across anybody who had collaborated at Dulag Loft?
Not that I was aware of, but there were always, say, rumours floating around. You didn't get an opportunity to speak to any because you were in individual cells, and they only opened the door to give you food, and it was a long corridor with doors each side, and if you got the opportunity, you would try and talk to the fellow opposite, but it didn't work. As I believe that there was a library there, and I actually got a book because the fellow opposite threw it across the passage to me, and once you got a book, it was, you could occasionally get down to this, they call it a small library, and change your book. So once you had a book, it gave you a reason to go and select another one. So I read one or two books there. I think they were given as a benefit for information, perhaps, if you'd been cooperative. And also, one time, I don't know how I managed it, but I joined in a queue that was washing and shaving, which was quite out of order, because when I got to my interrogator, he was very alarmed to see that I'd washed and shaved, because I think, again, this was a reward for cooperating.
What happened after Dulag Luft?
Dulag Luft, we got shipped off to the main camp, which was right in the east of Germany. It was we were put into cattle trucks, and I think we were absolutely jammed into these cattle trucks. I think there were 60 men in each truck. And we started our journey going east to finish up near Breslau in Luft 7, which was a new camp, which had been opened a few months before. It was one of the furthest, one of the camps furthest east, just south of east of Breslau. We went into camp there. It was an all Air Force camp. They seemed to separate the services. Particularly air crew, I understand that the air crew were separated because they were, I imagine they thought we were more familiar with maps and escapes and that kind of thing than, say, the average army personnel. So we were always kept in what they call Luft camps, which were purely for air crew.
Did you not experience bombing by the American Air Force on the way?
Yes, we got very heavily bombed at... We stopped one day, the train stopped, I can't think of the name of the place, I think it was the marshalling yards at...
Ham,
that's right. And we got very badly bombed there. The trucks were literally jumping off the rails. The Germans locked the doors and made off and looked very sheepish when they came back. And of course we weren't very pleased with them. We told them what we thought of them, and they all looked very ashamed. And anyway, we survived it. And on we went, and we were travelling for, I think, 5 days, and in these cattle trucks with fairly limited rations, and the weather getting colder and colder as we headed east. The source of warmth was the fact that there were so many in each truck. Eventually arrived in what looked like Siberia to me, and it turned out to be Upper Silesia, which was, I say, this new camp, and we went into camp there at Luft 7.
How were you treated there?
Not too badly. It was a very strange experience, of course. You were a bit apprehensive of everything because it was all such a new experience. We hadn't been there very long, and the Russians did a big attack through the east, coming up from the east, and they bombed the area of the camp. We had a rather exciting night during the bombing, and then we went out on the... we were told we were to march out, and we marched out, and we had we had 21 days on the road. Living rough, under very extreme conditions, experiencing minus 20 some nights.
When you say we, about how many were in the...
1,500 we left with. We lost quite a few on the way. Where they went to, we're not quite sure. A lot of them couldn't cope, and a lot of them were not as fit as some of us were. I believe we got into the final camp with something like over 1,000, but I wouldn't be sure of that figure.
Did you spend Christmas on this march?
We came out just after Christmas. We came out in the beginning of January, it was probably the worst time of my experience as a. In the services, because it was such horrific weather conditions. We marched a lot of the time with columns of civilians that they were fleeing from the Russians. There were thousands on the road with all their possessions. It was rather sad to see them, actually, with young children and elderly people on carts and pulling carts and bicycles, and we seemed to get mixed up with them. We were heading for the Oder, and when we got to the Oder, they were diverted in one direction, which led them right back into the Russian hands. And we crossed the Oder Bridge, and within an hour or two of crossing the bridge, they blew it. And we continued our march west.
Any incidents that happened to you on this march?
Yeah, we were attacked, by rocket-firing typhoons on one stretch. I can't remember where it was now. It was over the Oder, and I assume that they got the impression that the column was a column of German troops or something, and they attacked. But I don't think they were particularly accurate in the attack. They fired a few rockets, and I think they killed a couple of Germans, and I don't recall any Allied prisoners being killed.
What was the camp that you eventually arrived at?
We eventually got into a camp called 3A, and it was an army, what they call an Irish Straflager.
Irish?
Well, at one stage in the war, they got together all the Irish prisoners and put them into one camp with the mistaken impression that they could encourage them to help in the fight against the Russians. And this was known as an Irish Straflager. 3A Luckenwalde was the address. And it had long ceased to be a Straflager or an all-Irish camp at that time. We became acquainted with the stories. It was a very large camp, and it was the furthest one east, actually. At that time, it was quite close to Berlin, near Potsdam, and consequently, we were one of the last to be liberated. I think there were 32,000 in the camp. It consisted of an awful lot of Russians, almost every nationality that took part in the war, and we got a lot of prisoners in, American prisoners from the Ardennes. They lived under canvas, actually, because there were the lack of accommodation, and we were finally we were liberated there by the Russians. The Americans actually sent troop carriers to evacuate us, but the Russians didn't allow us to go, and we were becoming a bit suspicious of everything that was going on, and we've since found out that they were doing deals with the Allies before they were holding us to do deals with the Allies before they let us go. It was suggested when we were first liberated by a guard spearhead of Marshal Zhukov's forces, it was suggested that we join them in the battle for Berlin, but we were warned by our SBO that it would be a very foolish thing if we got involved, that we'd be displaced persons if we once left the camp area.
Was this the Russians who suggested
this
to you?
Yes. The initial Russians, the armoured spearheads. I stayed 3 weeks with the Russians, and then after they'd turned down the American transport, we became highly suspicious of the whole thing, and we made off. Five of us made a bolt for the far side of the camp, and got out and started running, and we ran for as long as we could run, and then hid up. Eventually, travelling at night when we got clear of the camp area. We'd been warned by the Russians that if we were found outside the camp, we would be treated as DPs and suffer the consequences of being caught.
What impression had the Russians made on you when they...
Very bad impression. They were quite aggressive. They were obviously... holding us, and they were very difficult people to deal with.
In what sense?
In the sense that they laid down certain stipulations, and they wouldn't tolerate any arguments against what they decided was to be done. Our people who were negotiating, the SBO and people like that, were trying to negotiate release and various other things, And they just laid down the terms, and there was no argument with them. They were just quite adamant about what was to be done and what wasn't to be done.
Did they appear to be a formidable soldierly force?
No, they appeared to be an absolute rabble. The only people that impressed me were the first units in, the guard spearheads. They were very soldier-like and very well equipped. The people that came in afterwards were unbelievable. They arrived with hand carts and bicycles, and they were the ragged uniforms. They foraged off the countryside. They seemed to have no lines of supply. It was quite incredible. They were amazing, amazing people, peasants.
Could they speak to you?
No. No. No, they had English-speaking people, of course, amongst the senior. There were a few sort of better calibre people who were running the camps, but they were very difficult to communicate with. It was obviously a holding exercise. Our camp was taken and we were being held there. I think the deal they were doing was that when they released all those prisoners over the in Austria, when they handed them over to the Russians, I think when that deal was done, we would have been released. But they were obviously holding us as hostages.
Was it easy for you to escape?
Quite easy, because there was quite a commotion on in the camp at the time. People were getting restless, and I think it was the time when the American troop carriers were waiting to take us away. They sent over 100 of these big trucks to evacuate us, and it was at that time that we got to the far side of the camp, and by that time the wire was down, and it wasn't a very secure camp.
Did you see anything of the state that Germany was in whilst you were on the loose?
Yes, we kept running across sort of areas where there'd been obviously battles. We found lots of bodies lying around, wrecked villages and that kind of thing. After we'd been loose for 2 or 3 days, we became quite blasé and started travelling and enjoying the day. And we met some very interesting people. We met army prisoners that were living off the countryside and sort of seemed to have no intention of going home. We eventually walked through a village one day, and there were two Russian soldiers on the other side of the road, and they looked across and we thought, oh, here's trouble. And we said we were Americans, because they just didn't understand anybody else. All they knew was the Americans and the equipment they got with the white star on the side. So we just said we were Americans. And they took us to a pub, which was almost blown apart, but the remains of a pub. And we went in, and I remember they had tins of sardines and they had bread, and we joined them on the bread and sardines. And eventually a rather strange-looking character appeared with a bottle of schnapps. So we all got gloriously drunk, and after it was all over, they took us into the main square of this small town or small village. And we met the town commandant, who turned out to be a female. She was a most amazing-looking woman. She had bandoliers of ammunition and across her chest and stick grenades in her belt. She looked like a real female warrior. Anyway, she billeted us on a couple in the town for the night, and with instructions the following day. She had a fellow spoke English, or a reasonable amount of English, and the following day was report to her, and we wandered down the following morning, and we had quite a pleasant evening, actually. And she took us round the back of the town hall, and there was one of these huge German barns. They seemed very large in Germany, the barns, and she opened the door of this barn, and it was full from floor to ceiling with bicycles. There were thousands of bicycles. So we selected one each and rode off into the sunset and headed off towards the American lines. And of course the problem was when we got there, we crossed the Spey. We had difficulty getting over the Spey because that was a little ferry, and we had a bit of a problem there. And we eventually got over and we got to the Elbe, and of course the bridges were blown, and there were Russian guards on the bridges, and there were thousands of people trying to get through. But of course the Russian guards were stopping, and we thought we'd have a problem, so we just merely walked to the front, more or less waved the guards to one side, threw our bikes into the Elbe, and went down the rope ladders and on the other side of the American First Army.
What was the problem crossing the River Spey?
Well, the problem with the Spey was there's a little ferry. It was on a chain. It was a very small ferry. It took one car, and there was an old fellow, a very old man, was operating it, and we approached him to take us across, and he refused. And it was almost like a melodrama that a car drove up, and a fellow got out who was so typically Russian it was unbelievable. He had a leather coat down to his feet and a large trilby on, and he was obviously Russian, and he said something to this fellow, put his car aboard this, it just fitted one car, and he must have said to the ferryman, who were we, and the ferryman sort of gesticulated to him and said that he wasn't taking us, and this fellow pulled out the biggest revolver I've ever seen in my life, held it to the fellow's head and indicated that we should join him. So we joined him, crossed the ferry, got to the other side, thanked him and pedalled on.
What were relations like generally between the Russian troops and the German civilians?
Oh, very bad. Very bad. They were very frightened of the Russians because they were seeking revenge, obviously, for what had happened to them in Russia. They were terrified. They were all trying to get to the West. It was a very sad situation, really, but they brought it upon themselves with the terrible atrocities in Russia. Obviously, the Russians were keen to get their own back.
Did any of the German civilians appeal to you for protection?
We did, actually. We picked up on our travels a young German girl who was terrified. I don't know where she'd come from, actually. We actually got her through into the West. We took her with us.
What happened to you in American hands?
Well, Americans treated us very well, of course. We were... I understood we were the first prisoners through the Elbe Bridgehead, but at the time we went through, I don't think we could have been the first. There was a newsreel camera did a newsreel of us. I don't know where that's got to. And we were treated extremely well there. And it was we were put into a pre-war barracks, German barracks, and sort of the world's our oyster. Anything we wanted, we could have. Cigarettes by the thousand, anything to eat. Just stayed there a few days, and then we got flown out to Brussels, which was appeared to be the route home for most ex-prisoners.
What condition were you in by now?
Not bad, actually, because we were all fairly young and fairly fit, and I hadn't been there a great deal of time. I'd lost weight, obviously, but a few of those meals with the Americans, and I was back on form again. They were very generous people. I got on very well with the Americans.
So once you got back to Britain, did the British authorities do much for you?
Yes, they were. It's the whole atmosphere was that the war was over, obviously, and that. we'd had a fairly rough time, and the people were as helpful as they possibly could be. We were examined in Cosford, medically examined in Cosford. I was found to be fit, and was sent home on indefinite leave. In fact, I was home so long that I eventually contacted them and immediately got a posting. And the posting turned out to be within half a mile of where I live at this present moment. Moved on a bit from there and went to a place in Southport and ran a prison camp there.
Who was in the prison camp?
Germans.
No Italians,
all German prisons, yeah. I ran this camp in at Woodvale, and eventually that closed down.
Were you the commandant?
Well, I was in charge of the prisons under... I was a warrant officer by that time, and I ran this camp on behalf of the... I suppose the adjutant, really. We had about... I collected the prisoners from the Midlands. I went to the Midlands to pick them up, and I think I brought about 350 of them back. And we established a camp. Woodvale is near Southport, on the about 20 miles from here. And when that camp closed down, I was posted to Stratford-on-Avon. When I arrived, the CO asked what I'd been doing. I told him I'd been running this camp, and he immediately put me in charge of a camp they had. So I got another batch of prisoners, and I ran the camp there for them.
Germans as well?
Germans, all Germans, yeah.
Was that actually in Stratford-upon-Avon?
Just outside, yes. It was what they call an MU, a maintenance unit. That eventually closed down and was occupied by the Navy. And for some reason we stayed, all the prisoners had gone, but we stayed and had a very pleasant few weeks there with them. And I was eventually demobbed from that camp.
So... what period were you running the German POW camps, do you think?
From about 19... I ran them for about a year.
45, 46?
Yeah, yeah.
How were the Germans being treated in comparison with the way the Germans treated British POWs?
I would say on a par, and the war was over. Everybody was willing to forgive and forget. I found no particular animosity. We didn't have any nonsense from them, obviously, but they had nowhere to go. There was no point in them escaping or anything, so they were quite easy to handle. Generally no problems at all. They did various tasks around the airfield. The place at Woodvale was a transport unit, so they did various jobs on the vehicles and cleaning up, and really I think they had more prisoners than they had jobs for them.
It sounds as though they were given some degree of freedom.
Oh, fair degree, yes. They weren't allowed out of the camp, but I'm sure some got out and came back again because they weren't secure by any means. But there was nowhere for them to go, so they might as well... They lived quite well. They made themselves quite comfortable and the rations were quite adequate. We never had any problems with them at all. We used to parade them morning and night just to count them and that was about it. There was no problem at all. As I say, the war was over, so it was just a case of filling in time for them till I went back home again.
Did they ever make complaints to you?
Well, we had a system whereby there was a complaint system, but we never really got any serious complaint. They seemed to sort out their own problems. They seemed to select their own representatives amongst themselves, and things were dealt with without bothering us, so it was all a very, very reasonable situation. Nobody bothered anybody else, really.